Welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to our special Walnut Wednesday report, we'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news here on the show today. And I'll start things off with a look at regional agricultural news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
According to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service's latest California Crop Progress and Condition Report, average lows for California ranged from 27 to 42 degrees in the mountains last week, 32 to 68 in the desert, 40 to 58 along the coast, and 41 to 55 in the Central Valley. Average highs for the state ranged from 32 to 63 in the mountains, 51 to 74 along the coast, 57 to 105 in the desert, and 58 to 94 in the Central Valley. From the California Department of Water Resources, snowpack water content in the northern Sierras was at 45.60 inches compared to 3.90 inches the state last year. Central Sierra was at 49.80 inches compared to 4.70 inches the state last year. Southern Sierra was 50.40 inches compared to 1.70 inches the state last year. California DWR Simmons stations recorded 1,766 chill hours at Gerber, 1,592 chill hours at Williams, 1,596 chill hours at Holt, 1,795 chill hours at Merced, 1,526 chill hours at Fresno, and 1,412 chill hours at Arvin. In the Sacramento Valley, rice planting continued with warm weather being replaced by some rain and cooler temperatures last week. As for fruit crops, grape buds continued to open and leaf out. Some bloom clusters were present. Grapes were sprayed for weeds and mildew. Navel orange harvest slowed while Valencia orange harvest continued. Lemons, grapefruit, and mandarins continued to be picked and packed. Seedless varieties of mandarins were netted to prevent pollination. Kiwi growers placed bee apiaries and groves as kiwi vines started to leaf out and bloom. Cherries continued to develop. Growers placed reflective foil in cherry orchards to improve color before harvest. Apples were sprayed for fire blight. Blueberries were irrigated and early harvest began in some areas. Strawberries continued to be picked. In the nut crops, pests began to appear with rising temperatures. Growers applied fungicides because of continued rainfall. Early variety pistachios have passed full bloom and have begun forming nutlets. Later varieties continue to bloom and leaf out. Some pistachio growers started small plant bug treatments to protect nutlets from damage. Meat fill began in some early variety almonds. Walnuts and pecans were tasseling and leafing out. And in the vegetable crops in the Sacramento Valley, asparagus harvest slowed due to light rain. Processing tomato planting continued. In Stanislaus County, tomato and sweet potato fields were treated for pests. In Tulare County, cucumbers, zucchini, and tomato planting continued. Cabbage, broccoli, lettuce, garlic, and onions continued to grow. And improved quality was noted on late plantings of lettuce, cabbage, and cilantro in Kern County. California lawmakers in the Assembly recently passed changes to a farm worker unionization law, a bill Governor Gavin Newsom signed last year to make it easier for farm workers to unionize. After lawmakers approved the bill last summer, Newsom first said he would not sign it. After weeks of pressure from labor groups, celebrities, and even President Joe Biden, the governor agreed to sign the bill under certain conditions. Lawmakers agreed to codify those conditions last week, which involved eliminating a piece of the bill that allowed farm workers to vote by mail in union elections. Farm workers can still vote through the card check process. Assemblyman Joaquin Arambola, a Democrat from Fresno, says this community deserves dignity and respect and deserves fair wages and labor protections. Throughout the week, some Republican lawmakers and lobbyists for the California Farm Bureau raised concerns that the changes were being negotiated during the legislature's opaque budget process instead of the normal public policy process that requires public hearings and more discussion on the issue. Republican Assembly Minority Leader James Gallagher noted lawmakers were enabling Newsom to bypass the legislation process by voting for the measure. It's wrong, he told lawmakers on the assembly floor. He says, let's have a process. If you want to change a bill, then let's do it through the normal process and let's have a discussion on whether that's a good thing for farm workers. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced selections for the USDA Regional Food Business Centers. 12 organizations, including University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources, have been selected to establish regional food centers that will provide coordination, technical assistance, and capacity building to help farmers, ranchers, and other food businesses access new markets and navigate federal, state, and local resources, thereby closing the gaps to success. In September of 2022, USDA announced $400 million available to fund this initiative. In total, USDA will establish 12 regional food business centers that will serve all areas of the country, including U.S. territories. Regional food centers will target their work to historically underinvested communities in their region. USDA and the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources will enter into a cooperative agreement to establish a Southwest USDA Regional Food Business Center that will serve California, Arizona, Nevada, and Utah. The $35 million project will have a particular focus on the Colonias communities, communities within a mainly rural U.S.-Mexico border region with marginal conditions related to housing and infrastructure of southern Arizona and California. USDA is excited to be partnering with the UCANR on this innovative and unprecedented initiative. According to Jenny Lester Moffitt, USDA Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, by leveraging the expertise now available through these regional food centers, USDA can offer unique support for local food systems development across the country. UCANR will primarily serve to coordinate technical assistance offerings across the multi-state region, managing the timing, frequency, and delivery of the Southwest USDA Regional Food Business Center's overall portfolio of technical assistance providers, educational courses, workshops, and trainings to reduce the potential for competing and duplicated content. It is so exciting to see 16 organizations across four states coming together with us to enhance and expand much-needed business support services to our food and farm businesses, according to Glenda Humiston, University of California Vice President for Agriculture and Natural Resources. Collectively, the organizations selected reflect an impressive cross-section of the varied institutions, organizations, and associations that must cooperate to achieve genuinely strong and distributed food systems. UCANR and the other selected organizations are already engaging with grassroots food and farm organizations and employing a wide range of creative strategies to build food system resiliency in their regions. The University of California will provide technical assistance throughout the state through its cooperative extension programs, consisting of the Small Farms Program, Regional Food Systems, Urban Agriculture Program, Community and Economic Development Network, and UC campus-based subject matter experts covering food safety, economics, and cooperatives. In addition, there are many partners and collaborators within the communities that will assist. More information is available on the USDA Agricultural Marketing Service website. From small plots to vast ranches, California's farmland attracts investment from all over the world. But as drought and climate change provoke anxiety over water and natural resources, state legislatures are proposing new restrictions. State Senator Melissa Hurtado, a Democrat from Sanger, introduced a bill to bar foreign governments and government-controlled enterprises from purchasing agricultural land in California beginning next year. Senate Bill 224 would also require California to track foreign government ownership of farmland in the state and publish the records in annual reports. In announcing the bill, Hurtado's office says it puts California in control of its food supply chain by preventing foreign governments from purchasing agricultural land and sets reporting standards to gain a better understanding on foreign ownership of California's resources. Hurtado said the bill is needed to keep too many California farms from falling into the hands of foreign governments, which then control the water and energy resources that come with the land. In her Central Valley district, pressures such as onerous regulations and water scarcity have driven farmers to sell. Other U.S. states are considering similar measures driven by heightened concern around water supplies in Western states and national security risks posed by countries such as Russia and China. 14 states already have varying laws restricting foreign investment in farmland. Within the past few years, more than a dozen states have created new bills to restrict foreign land purchases, bringing the number of states to either pass or propose restrictions to 29. Other countries have also passed similar laws to ensure domestic control over natural resources. As of December 31, 2021, foreign investors, including private companies, owned about 3% of all privately held agricultural land in the U.S. Nearly a third of that is held by Canada, with the Netherlands, Italy, the United Kingdom, and Germany accounting for roughly another third of all foreign-owned farmland. Well, a heavy dose of California rain during the first quarter of 2023 has put the state's strawberry production behind the three-year average. The month of April saw significant increases in production and volume and is poised to spike this month. They're about 2 weeks behind in terms of peak volume, but are catching up quickly, according to Jeff Cardinale, Director of Communications for the California Strawberry Commission. He says it all depends on the weather. If it stays warm and sunny, volume will come up quickly. During each of the first 3 weeks of April, organic strawberry volume doubled from the previous week, he said. As a result, during the last full week of April, shippers sent more than 250,000 cartons to market, making it the best week of the year to date. However, that is still significantly lower than last year. During the month of April in 2022, about 2 million trays of organic strawberries had been marketed compared to less than 900,000 this year. Last year, strawberry growers put at least 440,000 organic trays into the marketplace each week from the end of April into the second week of September, with the peak shipping week being mid-June with more than 1 million trays. As for this year, while there was definitely damage to the overall California strawberry crop from the flooding, the CSC spokesperson said it should not be overstated. Across the state, they estimated that 5% of strawberry farms were affected by the flooding, and they did have damage, he said, but 95% of the farms were unaffected, and for those growers, the rains were beneficial. While it is much too early to predict total volume for the season, which will stretch into November, it is possible that heavier yields from the uninfected fields will make up for the volume losses from the flooded fields. For the California strawberry industry, Cardinale says Mother's Day tends to be a benchmark event. Typically, by Mother's Day, 95% of the strawberries sold in the U.S. come from California, and that will again be the case this year.
AgroPlantae is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlantae formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlantae developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlantae, imagination, innovation, science in action.
We're back on this week's episode of Walnut Wednesday with another regulatory update from California Walnut Commission Director of Technical and Regulatory Affairs, Josh Ram, who gets right into it discussing an update to the Produce Safety Rule, which is part of the Food Safety Modernization Act, or FSMA.
Walnut haulers will now be expected to be in compliance with the harvest and post-harvest water portion of the rule during their Produce Safety Rule inspections. Walnut haulers classified as large farms will need to begin water testing as of 2023. Compliance dates, more specifically, that first window is as of January 23 for large farms with average annual sales over $500,000. The second window or phase is January 2024 for small farms with average annual sales over $250,000 and less than $500,000. And the third phase is January 2025 for very small farms with average annual sales over $25,000 and less than $250,000. And in the first year of compliance, a couple other requirements to be noted are haulers must initially test the microbial quality of each source of groundwater at least four times over a period of 1 year to ensure there is no detectable generic E. coli. If the four initial sample results meet the microbial quality criteria, you may test once annually after. If any annual test fails to meet the microbial quality criterion of no detectable E. coli, you must immediately discontinue the use and meet the initial requirements before resuming. Other notable items to ensure compliance include establishing a water change schedule for float tank water to maintain its safe and adequate sanitary quality, visually monitoring the whole quality of water, including the temperature of the water. You will also need to maintain a record of your water change schedule, and additional requirements will be needed for water treatments to ensure it meets the minimum standard and record keeping requirements. There's more information on the Produce Safety Rule, additional resources for walnut growers, holders and any industry member for that matter. So please encourage folks to visit walnuts.org and type produce safety rule in the search box. And there's a couple checklists, outlines, additional regulatory rule information, forms, charts, just to really help out those impacted by this rule, which is now in force.
Shifting gears a bit, Project Apis M's Seeds for Bees program is once again open to growers. The program incentivizes growers to plant cover crop seeds in their orchards that are most conducive to pollinator health, while also offering benefits to the soil in other areas.
It's a great program for pollinator health, above and below ground benefits in the orchard and for the environment. This enrollment is now open through August, the end of August 2023. Seeds for Bees encourages the use of cover crops to increase density, diversity, duration of bee forage in California orchards and farms while improving soil health. There's seed mixes available through Seeds for Bees that are designed to bloom at critical times of the year when natural forage is scarce but managed and native bees are active. Seeds for Bees really looks at serving that pollinator health, the bees, the beekeeper, growers, increasing sustainability of agriculture collectively. So something, if you're a grower and interested in participating, walnuts are eligible for the program. I believe we're enrolled as an industry a little over 1,000 acres. So reminder, if you're enrolled, this is open again. And if you're new, please visit projectapism.org. That's projectapism.org.
Information on Seeds for Bees and other available incentive programs to walnut growers can be found at the newly revamped Resources and Assistance Programs section of the Walnut Board website. Link in the description of this episode.
You basically go to walnuts.org and type in the search box Resources and Assistance Programs. You'll see a comprehensive listing of state and federal industry incentive programs and natural disaster, emergency relief assistance and resources, anything from Air Resources Board programs or CARB, California Department of Food and Agriculture, Healthy Soils, the SWEEP program, USDA, NRCS, to name a few. There's a whole list of resources there. Could go on for a while. So that's all in that one-stop shop. We have also posted updated 22 and 2023 walnut grower meeting presentations with sound scientific agronomic advice by researchers and cooperative extension advisors or farm advisors, making this site really a one-stop shop, as I said, for walnut grower and industry resources. And finally, if there's any questions about any of this information or related information, feel free to reach out to me at jrahm@walnuts.org for additional questions or comments.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Jahlstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack has just announced more actions aimed at making local and regional food systems stronger. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Two related USDA announcements Wednesday, both involving
technical assistance, financial assistance to continue strengthening our local and regional food system.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling reporters first about the creation of 12 regional food business centers across the country, which will work to develop more and better local markets for small producers and help them gain access to all of the programs that might be available to them. Second announcement, $420 million for the Resilient Food System Infrastructure Program. Money will go to state and territorial ag departments who will grant it out to groups working on local and regional food systems.
This is designed to provide resources to expand capacity in processing, collection, manufacturing, storing, transporting, wholesaling, and distributing specialty crops, dairy, grains for human consumption, aquaculture, and non-meat and poultry.
Vilsack said to expect more announcements like this in the coming months. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Crop insurers, lenders, and farm credit officials told senators that crop insurance is the most important farm bill safety net, but it needs to be improved. There was no mistaking the message about crop insurance.
It's the only viable risk management tool that our farmers have today.
That is William Cole, chair of the Crop Insurance Professionals Association, and Jason Meter of the Crop Insurance and Reinsurance Bureau.
Crop insurance is the number one risk management tool for farmers and ranchers to be able to support whether it's their loans or their livelihood and stability of agriculture.
But James Corin with the American Association of Crop Insurers says more support's needed for higher coverage levels through options like enhanced coverage option.
With ECO, when we went through the process, there was a statutory cap on how much subsidy or premium support the government could provide, and it would be helpful to get that increased.
And in comments from Gus Barker for the Independent Community Bankers of America, he says with regards to Farm Service Agency loan limits, they need to be adjusted upward. The price of land and inputs has just skyrocketed, and they're proposing $3.5 million for the ownership and a $3 million limit on the operating line for USDA guarantees. The Energy Information Administration says ethanol production rose week to week, while inventories dropped to the lowest level in 5 months during the week ending on April 28th. Output increased to an average of 976,000 barrels a day. That's up from 967,000 barrels during the prior week. The Midwest region, which produces the most ethanol in the country, rose to an average of 922,000 barrels a day from 916,000 barrels the previous week. Rocky Mountain output increased to 14,000 barrels a day, 1,000 barrels higher than a week prior. West Coast production also rose 1,000 barrels a day to an average of 4,000 barrels. Production on the East Coast and Gulf Coast held steady at 12,000 and 24,000 barrels a day, respectively. Ethanol inventories during the week plunged to 23.36 million barrels, down from 24.31 million barrels a week earlier, and the lowest level since the week ending on December 2nd.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.